You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Good morning and welcome to America's Web Radio and David's Pick. And we picked to go back to a friend of ours for a couple of reasons. One, he enjoys talking. And two, he is part of the Georgia Military Hall of Fame. And three, he's an author. And four, he's a publisher. And the only thing I can't get Bob to do is come dust and vacuum my studio. But we're working on it. We're working on it. Bob, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Well, you know, like we discussed, when you get to be my age, if you're vertical, that's a big plus. And I've been vertical all day, so I guess I'm doing okay.
That's good.
We, like I said, Bob was inducted into the Georgia Military Hall of Fame, and I want to invite...
Hey, correction, I am not in the Georgia Military Hall of Fame. I'm a big supporter of it, but have not been inducted into it. One day I may be, who knows?
Yeah, well, we'll just go ahead and nominate you, and we'll just play like you are. But anyway, the other part of the story is... Bob is a veteran of Vietnam. And by the way, I want to throw out something. I don't know how many people realize this, but it is an amazing fact that we do a show. We did a show with our Detailing Addiction. We've done several shows, Detailing Addiction, on the big deal of vaping and the folks that have died from vaping. And then Fox News does one on vaping. Then we did one on, we started on elderly abuse. We do a show weekly. We're the only radio station in the country that does a show dedicated strictly to elderly abuse. And guess what? Fox News started doing elderly abuse stuff. Today, before I came into the station, and Rick White, who is the executive director of the Georgia Military Hall of Fame, and also is a friend of Bob's. Anyway, to make a long story short, as I was getting ready to come to the station, Fox and Friends was doing a thing on Vietnam veterans. And but they related it to the fact that Texas is opening the Medal of Honor Museum. But what they were talking about was Vietnam veterans. And I'm just waiting now. We do a show called Let's Talk Venezuelan. And I'm just waiting to see how long it's going to take Fox News to start running a show on Venezuela. But anyway, with that being said, Bob, welcome again to America's Web Radio. And we want to talk about your publishing business over in Athens, Georgia, as well as the books that you've written, as well as your experience in Vietnam. And from my standpoint, I am thrilled beyond words that Vietnam veterans are getting the salutations that they deserve. And I think you feel the same way.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think the Vietnam War, now that we are in the 50th anniversary commemoration period, is bubbling up in the consciousness of the nation, and more people are opening their minds to hear from those of us who served and hear our stories. And a lot of our veterans are suddenly deciding, now that we're in our 70s, maybe it is time for us to tell our stories to our families and to the world, so that, you know, we're not going to live forever, so let's not take them to the grave with us.
You know, what you said, and I hope folks can go along with my my analogy of sorts, but I don't know of a family in the world that didn't have a favorite Uncle Joe, a favorite grandpa, a favorite whatever they call them, And that person had stories, and every family said, well, you know, Uncle Joe has some of the funniest stories or some of the funniest sayings. I'm going to write a book, or I'm going to record them. And I can remember when the cassette came out, and I'm going to get with Uncle Joe and record all those funny sayings that he has. And that's as far as the idea goes. But I think what you're doing and the writings that you're doing and the relating of the stories from Vietnam, I don't know a veteran that doesn't have not more than one and probably many, many, many more stories that need to be told. And, you know, we weren't the nicest people in the world in Vietnam either. And we also, in many, many, many cases, were fighting a war with one hand tied behind our back. And that was not right. And by the way, I want to make it clear, I did not go to Vietnam. I was in the military, in the Army during Vietnam, but I did not go to Vietnam. So I don't want to mislead anybody on that. But Bob did, and I'm sure you got some stories that you could relate to us right now.
Oh, yeah. I have been obsessed with military history and military stories for as long as I can remember. As a kid growing up in the Korean War, I always checked the daily newspaper to see the stories coming from the front lines of Korea and the pictures. And I've still today, at 76 years old, I'm just getting stronger in my obsession of preserving stories of America's veterans and those who support us. I have a project going right now that I tackled on my own, and I'm a member of the Atlanta Vietnam Veterans Business Association and have been since 2000 or thereabouts, and the organization started in the early 80s. But it is full of Vietnam veterans from every branch of the service, from every part of the war. And it struck me over the last couple of years that we need to get our stories written down. So I'm currently the executive vice president of the organization. So I tackled the project this spring that says we are going to put out a book full of stories from every aspect of the Vietnam War from our membership. And the title of the book is I'm Ready to Talk. For many of us, we didn't talk for a long time, but now we're ready to talk because there's enough people not telling the correct story about Vietnam, and there's enough people who hear erroneous information that the best way to fix that is for those of us who lived it to tell our stories so people can read the unvarnished truth from our point of view. And then they can draw their own conclusions.
You know, I think what you're doing is wonderful. And there were all sorts of rumors and innuendos and this and that. I can't say the word. Anyway, there were a lot of stories, and there was fake news going on back during the 60s and even the early 70s. I've never supported the way the war supposedly came to an end. I think we were, from my opinion, my personal opinion is that we were sold out, but a lot of other folks have different opinions, and I was not surprised when North Vietnam invaded South Vietnam and basically took over and renamed Saigon Hanoi City, I believe. Is that right?
Ho Chi Minh City,
yeah. And, you know, the amazing thing is a lot of people don't realize that Ho Chi Minh was an ally at one time.
He was in World War II, and then he became a strong communist supporter with Russia after World War II.
But it's and it was a proof of well, I think I said this the first time you were on, but if I would never throw rocks at my country. But if you analyze our situation, and like you said, you've always looked at history, and I would say the biggest problem that the United States has ever had, and this goes back to the Revolution, we have never had an accurate foreign policy, in my opinion. And we still sort of fumble around with our foreign policies, and I think this was what was part of getting us not only into Korea, but then into Vietnam, that, I think, and you were there, your boots were on the ground, you were in country, as we said, but I'm not sure our leaders knew that Vietnam was a total jungle. And that they were, I think some of them thought that we were going over to fight on cleared land, and there'd be just no problem. We know how to fight. We know how to camouflage. We know how to do this. But then when we got there, son of a gun, what is all this green stuff? Even to the point of the weapon that folks carried, the M16, that had an open flash suppressor.
Well, I tell you, the political side of any war is something I have chosen to stay out of. One of my favorite quotes from a soldier is, "It's not for me to reason why, it's but for me to do or die." And I want to capture, and am capturing, the stories of soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, who actually did the job that their country asked them to do. We had a number of people who were career military. We had a larger number who were draftees. And every one of us was a patriotic America, just like our fathers and forefathers in all of America's wars. We did what our country asked us to do. We weren't asked to decide on policy, we were there to implement whatever the idiots in Washington told us to do.
And Bob, I think you hit it right on the head, and this is something that I've been promoting since I was 18, I guess, or the first time I ever went on radio and spit my opinion out and got my hand slapped. But I don't think that any person elected, or even if they're elected, should be able to vote on military policies that haven't been there and done that. And, I don't think that Walter Cronkite should have had the ability and get away with what he did. We had Nurse Rowe on the other day, last week, in fact, and what a beautiful, beautiful lady. And like she said, when she gave an order, she meant for it to be done, period. And then when the news came into her triage operation and Dan Rather had his cameraman with him, she kicked him out. And that's, you know, the news doesn't need to be counting body bags. The news needs to be news, not my opinion of what's going on in Vietnam.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I'm 100%. See, and that's what I try to do, is let's not take those that have their own agenda. What I am collecting are stories from individuals on their individual experience. To my way of thinking, nobody can claim to be an expert on any war, specifically Vietnam, because Vietnam spread over 16 years when it was declared a war. From, you look at the wall, it says 1959 starting on the east panel and ends at 1975 as the west panel comes to join the east panel. So you think of that 16-year period, and there were a lot of phases and roughly 3 million Americans who participated in that war. And each one of us are like a thread in a tapestry. If we don't put our thread into that tapestry, it's not complete. So that's what I'm trying to do, is to put together as much of the tapestry from members of the Atlanta Vietnam Veterans Business Association to tell our perspective of our time in the Vietnam War.
Let's stop right there and take a quick break. We'll be back with Bob Babcock, right after this.
You can keep your doctor, you can keep your plan, and every family will save thousands of dollars a year. I'm Ellen Deal, and if you've been hurt by the Affordable Care Act, you can email MAGA45CAG@gmail.com to see if we can help. Small business owners, individuals, families, and baby boomers, email MAGA45CAG@gmail.com for three easy questions to determine if you can get away from Obamacare. I'm a 20-year veteran of the insurance industry and here to help you for all your insurance needs.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
And we're back on America's Web Radio and David's pick. And the name of the show is because I get to pick who I have on. And today we have Bob Babcock on, who is a Vietnam veteran. And we had Bob on several weeks ago and wanted him back today, and we had he had offered to come back any time, and we had a situation that we lost our guest, not literally, just he had something come up and couldn't do the show today, so we called Bob, and Bob was gracious enough to say yes. And talking back to your book, when does it come out, and how do people get it, and when can they get it, and all this kind of stuff?
Okay, well, my deadline for our veterans to pass stories to me from our AVBBA veterans is midnight this Friday, October 4th.
Wow.
That's the drop-dead date. And then I will start compiling the stories into the different parts of the book. In fact, the way I plan to do this, because I'm currently sitting on 130 plus stories, I expect I'll probably get 150 before all's said and done. Really, the Vietnam War, as I said, is 16 years from 1959 to 1975, and I'm going to present the stories in the different phases. We started off between 59 and 64 with the advisor phase, and that's when we had military advisors in there helping the South Vietnamese Army. And then in 65 to 67 was the build-up phase. We started with the Marines going into Da Nang, the 1st Cav going over to the A Trang Valley for the first big battle, and more. And I was part of the build-up phase. I got there in August of 66 with the 4th Infantry Division. And then in 68 to 69, that was when Tet hit, and that's when Walter Cronkite and the country turned against them. I call that the Tet and Major Battles phase. And then when Nixon was elected, we had the withdrawal phase. You had the Paris Peace Accords going on. And that's when we started pulling troops out. That was 70 to 72. And then we had the Vietnamization advisory phase, where once again we had advisors in there. And that was from 73 to 75. And that's when Congress did not do what they had promised to the South Vietnamese government, and they quit supporting them, and that's why North Vietnam won that. So April 30, 1975 was the end of the Vietnam War when Saigon fell.
You know, the older I get, the more I shake my head at a lot of things, and one of them is Vietnam, and we were, you know, did you ever totally or in your own mind really say, okay, I know exactly why we're here? It wasn't a black and white war like World War II, and even you had almost better information on Korea than you did on Vietnam. I don't, you know, oh, it's to stop communism in that area.
I knew exactly why I was there. I was going to stop communism in Southeast Asia before it gets to America. That's why we went. And once again, the different phases had different viewpoints. I, as one of the early guys, I was gung-ho. I knew that we had our hands tied when they wouldn't let us bomb Haiphong Harbor, and they wouldn't let us follow the bad guys into Cambodia and Laos and North Vietnam. But I was over there to stop communism in Southeast Asia. Later on, when the country turned against us and it became an unpopular war, people went over there knowing, hey, this isn't a good deal. I was gung-ho. So that's another piece I try to bring out in this book, is everybody saw it different. It depends on what branch of the service you were in. I mean, it's the Army, the Marines, the Air Force, the Navy, Coast Guard. We had civilians over there. You know, the rank of the person. You know, the higher rank you had, the more you knew about the strategy and what was going on big picture. And a private or a specialist, you know, a grunt on the line or an engine man in the machine room of a naval vessel didn't have a lot of clue other than what was going on right around them. The time, or rather the part of the country, you know, Vietnam, even though it's about the size of California, it's got the up north, it's got the border with North Vietnam. Down in the Delta, you got all the swamp, and you got everything in between. You got mountains, you got jungles, you got coastal stuff, you got the city of Saigon and other cities. So depends on where you were in the country. And then I've already talked about the time period that you serve. I'm lucky that I was there before it became an unpopular war. But once again, those who went in there when it was an unpopular war, they did their job to the best of their ability. So they were patriotic Americans who believe in what the country said. The Selective Service Act said, you're going to go. And they said, yes, sir, and they went. So you don't take it away from them. I went over there gung-ho, ready to stop communism. They went over there knowing all the crap that had gone on prior to them going, but they didn't run to Canada. They didn't become draft dodgers. They did their job, and they are great Americans, probably better Americans than I am, because I didn't have all that negative experiences that I'd read about in the papers before I went.
You know, here again, I don't know, I can't address the Spanish-American War. I wasn't there, and even that's a little older than I am. But I had we ever fought a war with negativism like this? I know Korea wasn't particularly popular, but it was still a our boys are fighting and we got to take care of our boys or girls.
Yeah. No, it's I think the Vietnam War stands alone at having such a, because it was so long, because the country was so divided. The Korean War sadly called the forgotten war. You know, we were still fresh off World War II, and they did not. It's sad that Korea was forgotten, because that was a bad, bad war. Lots of people fighting the North Koreans, and then when the Chinese came in, I've got friends who fought there, and that was every bit as tough as World War II, but they never have been recognized, because I think America was tired of war after World War II, and then we had a big gap before Vietnam. We had the Cold War, of course, and always the Russian threat, but by the time Vietnam came around and we started sending major units over in 65, there'd been enough breathing time that the country was sort of, okay, well, this is fine, we'll do what's right. And you went from a point of, you know, basically you had public opinion was ignorance and apathy, and you had mild support. And then as it went on and Tet hit and the big fights of the 68, 69 time frame, you got into the disillusionment and opposition. And then it came, as we all know that lived through it, the protests and the riots. And then when we started pulling back, it became relief and indifference. You know, thank God we got that over with. Now let's get on with life. And for those of us that were there and did it, we lost friends there. You know, we have people dealing with post-traumatic stress. We have people who have physical and mental wounds that they will deal with all their lives. So the reason I'm so passionate about this is we have stories to tell, and it is our responsibility to our family, to our unit, to our country, our American history, to preserve our stories and let those of us who were actually involved, whether in the air, on the ground, on the sea, this is my view. So learn about this, future generations, from those of us who were there and not from those who have an agenda to prove through the news or through the government. Listen to those of us who don't have an axe to grind. I'm just telling you about what the most amazing and memorable year of my life.
You know, we need to take a break. We'll be back with Bob right after this.
This is Ron Camacho, host of the Business Hour, on Fridays from 10 to 11 a.m. Join me as I talk with passionate professionals on a program that profiles the best businesses, business professionals, business practices, and fascinating individuals to get an insider view of how America works, 10 to 11 a.m. on America's Web Radio.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
45 years of experience is behind the most trusted name in auto transportation. Passport Transport, the first and finest today. That's why Passport Transport is the preferred auto transport for major auto manufacturers, concours, museums, tours, and collectors, and should be your choice from across the state to across the country. When you have the need, go to PassportTransport.com and enjoy the peace of mind referenced experience will give you. Passport Transport.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
And we're back on America's Web Radio and David's Pick with our friend and he's really helping us out today, Bob Babcock. And Bob is a publisher and writing a book about Vietnam. And I, while we were off the air for a second, want to remind everybody that Johns Creek has Johns Creek Vietnam Veterans Association as well. Or I think it's just Veterans Association, not Vietnam. But anyway, they do, or they, I say they do, they bought one of the traveling Vietnam walls and display it on different occasions. And I believe they'll be bringing, well, I know they'll be bringing it out on November for Veterans Day. And if you haven't been to Washington and the original wall, it's I don't know how to describe it. It's for anybody that was in that era, and I know I had high school friends that died in Vietnam. I had college friends that died in Vietnam. And to go to that wall and find their name is probably one of the most touching things that I ever did. And you touch the wall, and it's almost like you're feeling their spirit. And I haven't been to the Johns Creek traveling wall, but I'm sure for many people it's the same experience. And if they had, I was fortunate, I didn't have any loved ones that none of my family went to Vietnam. We were either too young or too old and had already done our time, but it's a very touching thing. And Bob, I think you're familiar with it, right?
Yeah, I am. The Atlanta Vietnam Veteran Business Association has several of our members who are providing actual work and materials for the construction of what they're doing. We've got a Navy CD, Bill Lusk, who's doing it. John, I'm drawing a blank on me, on his name, doggone it, Gravel. Anyway, not, but he is doing a lot of the site work. So Alan Gravel, there you go, I pulled it up. But there's a lot of people helping there, plus the Johns Creek people are driving it, doing a great job. So that's something that I haven't been to either, but I plan to go to as soon as I get back over there on the north side of Atlanta again.
Well, we it's interesting that it's, if you were a guessing man or a betting man, coming back in 65, 68, 69, 70, and going through an airport where you couldn't even wear your uniform, and you had the protesters, you had all the protesting, would you have bet it had it would turn out like it has, which is finally good recognition of the Vietnam veterans, not bad recognition? And I know I do. I have friends that if someone pointed at you and said baby killer, they would probably get it beat out of them, you know? And
yeah, it's a very interesting change. And to me, the change happened with Desert Storm. You know, basically, I was one of those Vietnam vets that kept it to myself. I didn't get involved with veterans organizations until the 80s. I was at the wall when they dedicated the three-man statue, and I've been involved since then. But in Marietta, we had a parade at the end of Desert Storm. In fact, President Johnson Sr., Bush Sr., rather, was declared 4th of July nationally having parade. So we had a ragtag group of Vietnam vets who were second in the parade. We had a unit of the 82nd Airborne led the parade, fresh back from the desert on Desert Storm, and we were behind them. The Vietnam vets got more applause from the audience than did the 82nd guys. They got it, But I think the people about then said, you know what, these guys have been dealt a crappy hand by the American people, and we want to fix it. And I think since then, it has become very much, they get it, that we were handed a poor welcome home. And we Vietnam vets have led the charge in welcoming today's crop of Iraq, Afghanistan, and all the other hot spots around the world to make sure that today's generation are treated right. And so we drag along with that. And I still, when somebody says, welcome home, I know they're one of us. And then you hear people say, thank you for your service. And quite honestly, I'm not a skeptic on that. But sometimes that's kind of like saying, hey, nice day, isn't it? But anyway, yeah, we're finally being acknowledged and not spit on. I've got a great story in the book by Dan Bennett, who was he was a flyer over there. He was on gunships, Air Force gunships. He came home and within the Los Angeles airport, and a Hare Krishna guy jumped him. And being a guy fresh out of a combat zone, Dan turned around and slugged him. And Dan's the one that got arrested and spent two nights in the Los Angeles jail for no reason. And that's how the police were out in Los Angeles back then. You know, another story of a good friend, Ron Sherman, was a photographer in Vietnam. And he did some fabulous work with photography, both reconnaissance work, some sleuthing work, and did a lot there. And then he came back and became a professional photographer. And he came to me, he said, I have a history of Atlanta through my lens from the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s. And during that time, Atlanta doubled in size. And Ron Sherman was there working for UPI, AP, Business Week, various publications. And he put together a book of his photographs that covers the Olympics, that covers the airport, it covers Jimmy Carter. It can places, people, events, personalities. That's going to be a great book coming out later this year, early next year.
Let me ask, Bob, do you... is there anything in your book or a place in your book? Vietnam brought out, for lack of a better word, some of the damnedest things that we'd ever seen during a period of war or a period of, like they used to call Korea, police action, so they didn't have to say war. But in, I don't think ever... And I could be totally 100,000% wrong, but I've known there's always been folks that disagreed with conscientious objectors. I think they even had them in World War II. I guess they've always had them since the draft. But in your book, do you have any of the conscientious objectors that wound up being heroes as medics and heroes as other things that, you know, back in that era, I was totally, I was so young, I really didn't know what a conscientious objector was. I thought they were a coward that just didn't want to be there. And
in this book, and once again, the book's title is I'm Ready to Talk. I don't have those yet unless somebody sends them, but I have done it. I did a complete book called Vietnam Combat Medic by Ron Donahue, who lives out in Washington State. He was there at the same time I was, in fact, in the same brigade I was in. And fabulous book, Jehovah's Witness, legitimate conscientious objector, did his job, was out in some major battles. I wrote a Bronze Star recommendation for Valor for my platoon medic, Julian White, who crawled out under enemy fire to take care of squad leader of mine, who is still a great friend. And Julian went AWOL before we went to Vietnam, but showed up and went over on the ship with us because his duty to country was equally as important as his conscientious objector position. So he did well in Vietnam and earned a Bronze Star for valor. My radio operator turned out to be a conscientious objector. I've got a great story in my What Now Lieutenant book about him. But I am a big supporter of conscientious objectors who do their job, and they got more guts than I do. I always carried my rifle, never set it down until I got home.
Till you got to the hooch.
Yes, sir.
You know, again, I'm glad that you're doing that because it's people don't have a clue, or many people. Obviously, those that served know all about it, but those that didn't, you know, have no clue. And it took us a while, as I recall, in the 60s, it took us a while to try to figure out why Kennedy was taking us there, then what Lyndon was doing. And people don't know it was Lyndon and Lady Bird making a fortune off of Vietnam. And, you know, like you said, you don't want to get political, but it was a political war. And Dean Russ and Kissinger and
McNamara was the bad guy along with Johnson.
Yep. And neither one of them had ever served a day in the military.
Right, right.
And I agree with you as far as certainly Johnson and McNamara. He was a fruitcake from Boston, wasn't he?
Yeah, I don't know what McNamara did. I keep my mouth shut about what I think about him, but he's not at the highest point of my list of people I admire.
No. No, I totally agree with that. We're coming up on our last break, but again, I want to thank Bob and encourage any and everyone, if you're just traveling through Atlanta or if you live here and you haven't been to it, please take the time to go downtown to the Georgia Military Hall of Fame. And there are interesting stories. We had Donna Rowe on last week. She was the first lady to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. And it is so good that many states, including Texas, they're copying it. And Rick White has done an excellent job on putting it together. And you really need to take the time out and take your kids and your grandkids and explain it and let them read about the heroes that have come from Georgia. Some are in Vietnam. The Military Hall of Fame goes back well before Vietnam, right, Bob?
Yeah.
So take the time to go down, and it was sort of nice that one of the first times, excuse me, that I went to Savannah, and you know the little square where they have all the graves and one square and then another square and all this stuff. There was a General Moxley, and that's as close as I've become to being an officer. But anyway, it was nice, and heritage and history are incredible things that we've got to continue to tell the truth about. So with that being said, we'll be back on David's Pick with our great guest and my hero, Bob Babcock, right after this.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not,
You probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Both of your days are Tuesdays?
If your health insurance premium is more than your mortgage, Ellen Deal with Ideal Solutions is here to help. Whether you're a small business owner, individual family, or baby boomer, email maga45cag@gmail.com, and I'll respond with three easy questions to help you determine if you can get away from Obamacare. As a 20-year veteran of the insurance industry, I'm here to help with all your insurance needs. Email Ellen Deal at maga45cag@gmail.com.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
And as always, we do thank you for listening. And even if a mic is open, we thank you for listening. But anyway, sometimes, as my IT likes to say, I overuse this, but sometimes you get the bear and sometimes the bear gets you. But Bob and I are talking about a new show we're going to be doing. I want to remind everybody that today is, today is our Let's Talk Venezuelan Day. And we've got Josie, who is running for the 4th District to get rid of a representative that's not worth stepping on. And then our campaign manager, who goes by Cat, which is Carlos Alfredo or Al whatever. Anyway, they'll be in at 1 o'clock to do the English show, and then they stay and do an all-Spanish show at 2 o'clock. And it is always fun. So no, whether you speak Spanish or English, we got you covered. But that show is just fun. What can I say other than it is just fun? This show, and particularly with a Vietnam veteran, is very serious. And what are the chances of taking your book and making a movie out of it, Bob?
I'd love to do that type of thing, but you know, who knows? I don't want somebody to Hollywoodize something, because you know they've got to throw all kinds of crazy stuff in it, because people don't want to hear the real truth coming from the gut of the person who lived it. So I'm not much into Hollywood movies. However, if anybody wants to read 130 plus stories from people, and we also have a handful of wives' stories, because they have great stories to tell while they stayed home when their soldier was over. We don't have instant communications back then like we do today. But if anybody would like to pre-order this book, they can go to my website at www.deedspublishing, like D-E-E-D-S publishing.com, and click on bookstore, and they will find this book. And it is I'm Ready to Talk by Robert O. Babcock, and you can pre-order it. It will be available the first week of December, and some fabulous stories in there. And I'm getting more. I read a story last night from a guy who flew a lift of South Vietnamese people out of Saigon the day it fell. He had one of the last flights taking people out of Tonsonut Air Base with rockets pulling at him. Fascinating story.
Oh, I bet. Golly. And I'm sure you have some dust-off stories. And one thing I was going to ask that I forgot to ask. You talked about the photographer. How many pictures do you have of situational pictures. We always see the guy without the shirt on and the dog tags hanging around his neck at a hooch or whatever. But how many other pictures did you incorporate in the book?
I'm not going to have probably more than a dozen, 18, just sort of generic pictures. I don't want to get all these junked up pictures that are hard to get good quality on. But I will have some, what I hope to do is spread through the books some generic pictures that anybody could identify with. I don't want a picture of my three friends and me, but, you know, I've got some decent pictures and we'll get some more to go in it.
That's super.
And the stories cover everything from very poignant, emotional stories, people working with the civilian population, a chaplain feeding sea rations to a scout dog while they were on break. That's John Frazier, my great friend. And it's just amazing. Every time I read this thing and get new stories, I shake my head and turn to my wife, Jan, and say, Jan, this is a fabulous book that we're creating. In fact, Jan's the one that came up with the title, I'm Ready to Talk. And it's time for Vietnam vets to start talking. Because, folks, we're in our 70s. We're not going to live forever. And if you take your story to your grave with you, you're doing your family, your unit, your branch of service, and your country a major disservice. Think about this. You are a thread in a beautiful tapestry of American history called the Vietnam War. And if your thread is not included in that tapestry, you haven't done your job, my friend.
Now, how many love stories do you have in the book?
I've got a few. In fact, I got a fascinating story about a guy who got a pen pal from the U.S. Sending him stuff and wanted to take him to church with her when he came home. And he did, and they remained friends. That's not a real love story, but a friend story. And then the love stories of the wives staying at home with babies being born while their husband was gone. We got a few of those.
And I'm just curious, because I'd forgotten some of them, so I went online and got some. Do you ever mention Jody's?
Jody. No, we don't talk about Jody. I don't think I've got any stories about Jody.
No, the Jody's as far as the marching...
Jody calls?
Yeah.
Not really, because most of these are in-country stories, and we didn't do any marching over there. I mean, you know, we're route step, and we're spread out, and we're doing the stuff that we want to do. But
double time? I'm sure you did a little of that.
Yeah, I lost you there for a minute.
Oh, okay.
Let me come back with one quick thing.
Sure.
A good friend of mine that you've mentioned, Colonel retired Rick White, the Georgia Military Veterans Hall of Fame induction ceremony for the 2019 class of 15 honorees will be held on Saturday night, the 2nd of November, down in Columbus, Georgia. And to get details on that, it is www.gmvhof.org, Georgia Military Veterans Hall of Fame is what the initials stand for, .org. You can get all the details. I've got some friends that are in that, been inducted, and I highly recommend you look into going to that major event on Saturday night down in Columbus, Georgia.
Do you have a story from Donna Rowe by chance?
I do not. She's not a member of Atlanta Vietnam Veteran Business Association. We have had her as a speaker, but for whatever reason, she's not a member of our organization.
Oh,
maybe
okay.
I ought to call her and get a story.
Oh, yeah. She has
Oh, I know. She's got a book of them.
Yeah, as a nurse in Vietnam, she ran a triage operation, and very interesting lady. She was a wonderful guest.
I know, Don. And also, I published another book, Vietnam Nurse, by Lou Eisenbrandt in Kansas City, who worked up in I Corps, Da Nang, in the hospital up there, working with the Marines and the Army. Fascinating book.
Well, you know, it's it was an interesting time. That's probably the nicest thing I can say about it, but it was an interesting time. And I think it, you know, with and again, not getting political by any means, but, you know, we sort of have questions today about our government, about our politics and so forth, and politicians as far as that goes. But, you know, I look at it like if we made it through Vietnam, we can make it through anything, you know. And we had a divided country then, but people slowly but surely woke up to the fact that we are, and you're so blessed to be born here and serve here and be a part of the greatest country ever in world history, the greatest country in the world and in history, the United States of America. And we are very lucky to have veterans like yourself, a few of the World War II veterans still with us, and a few of the Korean War veterans still with us. And people have to wake up and realize that we may not agree on everything, but we have one common denominator. I am an American. And we should live by that.
Amen. We are very fortunate to live here. If you don't like it, go live somewhere else. Quit fighting us.
Yep, I couldn't agree with you more. And but I honestly feel like slowly but surely, just as it did from Vietnam, slowly but surely, it's changing, and people are beginning to realize how wonderful this country is, and that no matter where you come from, you have an opportunity here, and it reaches everything. And, you know, I can't address Vietnam at all. Have no idea. But, you know, we have a lot of people that we throw in the class of illegal aliens or whatever. And they are. And I don't try to hide that a minute. But they also wind up serving in our military. And many of them, I don't know what the number was in Vietnam, but there are a lot of them that wind up being heroes. They did in Iraq. They have in Afghanistan. And I'm not saying I'm still opposed to the illegal, but at the same token, they've seen an opportunity and they've taken it. And that's through the military. And that's something else. And we only got we don't even have a minute. We're going to have to go. But the military, and I think this is where a lot of people don't understand, offers so much to the individual. Everything from college education up and down the gambit. And I'm very fortunate. I have a son that's in the military, and he's a great, great officer, and very proud of him. With that being said, Bob, I got to thank you, and we got to put the plug in the jug and get out of here. And I'm going to call you back in just a few minutes, if you don't mind.
Okay, David, take care. I've enjoyed being on the show.
Thank you, sir. Talk to you in
a little. God bless America.
Absolutely. Amen. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.